No music. I thought of the nearly empty temple of Ikt, the divine of Ikt, telling me of hundreds of singers long gone. I was nearly 2 hours in the temple, admiring the shrines of subsidiary gods. The entire place must have taken up whatever part of this side of the station wasn't occupied by the palace proper. The two were certainly connected, since Anander Mianai acted as priest here at regular intervals, though the accesses wouldn't be obvious. I left the mortuary shrine for last, partly because it was the part of the temple most likely to be crowded with tourists, and partly because I knew it would make me unhappy. It was larger than the other subsidiary shrines, nearly half the size of the vast main hall, filled with shelves and cases, crowded with offerings for the dead. All food or flowers, all glass. Glass teacups holding glass tea, glass steam rising above. Mounds of delicate glass roses and leaves. 2 dozen different kinds of fruit, fish, and greens that nearly gave off a phantom aroma of my supper the night before. You could buy mass-produced versions of these in shops well away from the main concourse and put them in your home shrine, for gods or for the dead. But these were different, each one a carefully detailed work of art, each one conspicuously labeled with the names of the living donor and the dead recipient, so every visitor could see the pious mourning and wealth and status on display. I probably had enough money to commission such an offering, but if I did so and labeled it with the appropriate names, it would be the last thing I ever did. And doubtless the priests would refuse it. I had already considered sending money to Lieutenant An's sister, but that, too, would attract unwelcome curiosity. Maybe I could arrange it so that whatever was left would go to her, once I had done what I'd come here to do, but I suspected that would be impossible. Still, thinking it, and thinking of my luxurious room and expensive, beautiful clothes, gave me a twinge of guilt. At the temple entrance, just as I was about to step out onto the concourse, a soldier stepped into my path. Human, not ancillary. She bowed.
"Excuse me, I have a message from the citizen Vel Osk, Captain of Mercy of Kalar."
The captain who had stared at me as I made my offering to Amat. The fact she'd sent a soldier to accost me, said she thought me worth more trouble than a message through station systems, but not enough to send a lieutenant or approach me herself. Though that might also have been due to a certain social awkwardness, she preferred to push off onto this soldier. It was hard not to notice the slight clumsiness of a sentence designed to avoid a courtesy title.
"Your pardon, citizen," I said. "I don't know the citizen Vel Osk."
The soldier gestured, slight, deferential apology.
"This morning's cast indicated the captain would have a fortuitous encounter today. When she noticed you making your offering, she was sure you were who was meant."
Noticing a stranger in the temple in a place as big as this was hardly a fortuitous encounter. I was slightly offended that the captain hadn't even tried to put more effort into it. Mere seconds of thought would have produced something better.
"What is the message, citizen?"
"The captain customarily takes tea in the afternoons," said the soldier, bland and polite, and named a shop just off the concourse. "She would be honored if you would join her."
The time and place suggested the sort of social meeting that was, in reality, a display of influence and associations, and where, ostensibly, unofficial business would be done. Captain Vel had no business with me, and she would gain no advantage in being seen with me.
"If the captain wants to meet Citizen Savarden," I began.
"It wasn't Captain Savarden the captain encountered in the temple," the soldier answered, again slightly apologetic. Surely she knew how transparent her errand was. "But of course, if you wanted to bring Captain Savarden, Captain Vel would be honored to meet her."
Of course. And even houseless and broke,
Savardin would get a personal invitation from someone she knew, not a message through station systems, or a this edge of insulting invite from Captain Vell's errand runner. But it was exactly what I had wanted. I can't speak for Citizen Savardin, of course, I said. Do please thank Captain Vell for the invitation. The soldier bowed and left. Off the concourse, I found a shop selling cartons of what was advertised merely as lunch, which turned out to be fish again, stewed with fruit. I took it back to my room and sat at the table, eating, considering that console on the wall, a visible link with station. Station was as smart as I had ever been when I had still been a ship. Younger, yes, less than half my age, but not to be dismissed, not at all. If I was discovered, it would almost certainly be because of Station. Station hadn't detected my ancillary implants, all of which I had disabled and hidden as best I could. If it had, I would have already been under arrest. But Station could see at least the basics of my emotional state. Could, with enough information about me, tell when I was lying. Was certainly watching me closely. But emotional states, from Station's view, from mine when I was Justice of Torin, were just assemblages of medical data, data that were meaningless without context. If, in my present dismal mood, I had just stepped off a ship, Station would possibly see it, but not understand why I felt the way I did and wouldn't be able to draw any conclusions from it. But the longer I was here, the more of me Station saw, the more data Station would have. It would be able to assemble its own context, its own picture of what I was, and would be able to compare that to what it thought I ought to be. The danger would be if those two didn't match. I swallowed a mouthful of fish, looked at the console. Hello, I said. The AI who's watching me?
Honored Gaiad Breck, said Station from the console, a placid voice. Hello. I'm usually addressed as Station.
Station, then. Another bite of fish and fruit. So you are watching me. I was genuinely worried about Station's surveillance. I wouldn't be able to hide that from Station.
I watch everyone, Honored. Is your leg still troubling you?
It was, and doubtless Station could see me favor it, see the effects of it in the way I sat now.
Our medical facilities are excellent. I'm sure one of our doctors could find a solution to your problem.
An alarming prospect, but I could make that look entirely understandable. No, thank you. I've been warned about Rodchai medical facilities. I'd rather endure a little inconvenience and still be who I am. Silence for a moment. Then Station asked,
Do you mean the aptitudes or re-education? Neither would change who you are, and you aren't eligible for either one, I assure you.
All the same, I set my utensil down, we have a saying where I come from. Power requires neither permission nor forgiveness.
I have never met anyone from the Gerentate before, said Station.
I had, of course, been depending on that.
I suppose your misapprehension is understandable. Foreigners often don't understand what the Rodchai are really like.
Do you realize what you've just said? Literally, that the uncivilized don't understand civilization? Do you realize that quite a lot of people outside Roch space consider themselves to be civilized? The sentence was nearly impossible in Rodchai, a self-contradiction. I waited for, that wasn't what I meant, but it didn't come. Instead, Station said,
Would you have come here if not for Citizen Savardin?
Possibly, I answered, knowing I couldn't lie outright to Station, not with it watching me so closely. Knowing that now any anger or resentment, or any apprehension about Rodchai officials, that I felt, would be attributed to my being resentful and fearful of the Rach.
Is there any music in this very civilized place?
Yes, answered Station, though I don't think I have any music from the Gerentate.
If I only ever wanted to hear music from the Gerentate, I said, acid, I would never have left there.
This didn't seem to faze Station. Would you prefer to go out or stay in?
I preferred to stay in. Station called up an entertainment for me. New this year, but a comfortably familiar sort of thing. A young woman of humble family, with hopes of clientage to a more prestigious house. A jealous rival who undermines her, deceiving the putative patron as to her true noble nature. The eventual recognition of the heroine's superior virtue, her loyalty through the most terrible trials, even uncontracted as she is, and the downfall of her rival, culminating in the long-awaited clientage contract and 10 minutes of triumphant singing and dancing. The last of 11 such interludes over 4 separate episodes. It was a very small-scale work. Some of these ran for dozens of episodes that added up to days or even weeks. It was mindless, but the songs were nice and improved my mood considerably. I had nothing urgent to do until word came of Savardin's appeal. And if Savardin's request for an audience and for me to accompany her was granted, that would mean another, even longer wait. I rose, brushed my new trousers straight, put on shoes and jacket. Station, I said, do you know where I can find the Citizen Savardin Vendai?
The Citizen Savardin Vendai, answered Station from the console, in its always even voice, is in the security office on sub-level 9.
Excuse me?
There was a fight, said Station. Normally, security would have contacted her family, but she has none here.
I wasn't her family, of course, and she could have called for me if she wanted me. Still, can you direct me to the security office on sub-level 9, please?
Of course, honored.
The office on sub-level 9 was tiny. Nothing more, really, than a console, a few chairs, a table with mismatched tea things, and some storage lockers. Savardin sat on a bench at the back wall. She wore gray gloves and an ill-fitting jacket and trousers of some stiff, coarse fabric, the sort of thing extruded on demand, not sewn, and probably produced in a preset range of sizes. My own uniforms, when I had been a ship, had been made that way, but had looked better. Of course, I'd sized each one properly. It had been a simple thing for me to do at the time. The front of Savardin's gray jacket was spattered with blood, and one glove was soaked with it. Blood was crusted on her upper lip, and the small, clear shell of a corrective sat across the bridge of her nose. Another corrective lay across a bruise forming on one cheek. She stared dully ahead, not looking up at me or at the security officer who had admitted me.
"Here's her friend, citizen," said security.
Savardin frowned, looked up, around the small space. Then she looked more closely at me.
"Breck? Otter's tits, that's you. You look..."
She blinked, opened her mouth to finish the sentence, stopped again, took another somewhat ragged breath.
"Different," she concluded. "Really, really different."
"I only bought clothes. What happened to you?"
"There was a fight," said Savardin.
"Just happened on its own, did it?" I asked.
"No," she admitted. "I was assigned a place to sleep, but there was already someone living there. I tried to talk to her, but I could hardly understand her."
"Where did you sleep last night?" I asked. She looked down at the floor.
"I managed."
Looked up again at me, at the security officer beside me.
"But I wasn't going to be able to keep managing."
"You should have come to us, citizen," said security. "Now you've got a warning on your record, not something you want."
"And her opponent?" I asked.
Security made a negating gesture. It wasn't something I was supposed to ask.